From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
So we knew what Novo was going to be about simplicity, about being dairy-free. We all had this shared vision of what it was going to be, and then the challenges were how to get there and bring it to market.
I'm Conor Carney, and today we have a very special episode with Brian and Rachel from Novo. Novo is an Irish food company creating delicious treats such as dairy-free ice cream and chocolate with as little as 5 ingredients. The couple started the business in 2012 and have since grown Novo into an international brand with even bigger future ambitions. In this conversation, Rachel and Brian talk about what it was like to leave their secure jobs in New York and come back home to Ireland to sell ice cream at farmers markets, as well as the ups and downs and many challenges they've encountered along the way. Brian kicked off our chat by bringing us back to 2012 when they came up with the initial idea for Novo.
I suppose the kernel of it was on the business side, was nearly myself and Rachel wanting to go into business together nearly. At that stage, we were boyfriend and girlfriend and we were living in New York. I suppose on the product side, being in New York, and New York as a city, it tends to be a number of years ahead of different places when it comes to trends and for various different categories. But so we saw a lot of interesting things going over there in the food space and had loads of different crazy ideas at that stage, all in that health food arena. And then we actually moved back to Ireland. But I suppose before that, even as a way of following our passion and love for food, we actually went to Italy to work in a restaurant for 5 months in Emilia-Romagna, and worked in a restaurant there for as I said, about 5 months. And that really opened our eyes to a few things. Firstly, working together was something we love doing and wanted to continue doing that in a different guise. And also just being exposed to just the purity of ingredients in that region and the restaurant we were working in, it was literally just picking from the ground and serving on a plate. And it was kind of reaffirmed our love for that side of things in terms of just using a few healthy ingredients to create something. So then moved back to Ireland and kind of kept trying to follow that goal of what it might be. And initially it was an almond milk, which Rachel was making, literally just almonds, water, and a little bit of vanilla extract. At that stage, was it 9 years ago, maybe? Yeah. At this stage, it was plant-based milks were not anywhere on shelf. But in New York, we had started seeing it. So started trying to develop that. But on the commercial side, there was a serious issue around shelf life because we were literally making this at home and it was fresh. It was, as I said, almonds, water, vanilla extract. It was probably 2 days max. So commercially, that didn't make sense. And at this stage, we were applying for a place in Enterprise Ireland and would be a run program called Foodworks. And on that application, one of the questions was shelf life and scalability. So when we got to that question on the list, we were kind of like, uh-oh, this isn't going to work. So I think we entered in an answer saying, well, we're going to actually freeze almond milk and turn it into an ice cream, which we had no idea how to do. So when we got called for an interview, we panicked firstly and then bought a little ice cream machine and tried to make a product that we said we could make. And that's nearly what kicked it off, to be honest. It was really a love for or a drive to create something together as a couple. And also in that space and that passion for something really delicious and pure from few ingredients.
Was it hard to get the experience in the food business? Like, I suppose you had worked in a restaurant in Italy, probably quite different from wholesale products and creating your own products. Was it difficult at the start, or did you have kind of previous experience in that world?
No, like we were coming from completely different backgrounds. So my background was advertising and marketing, and Brian's background was finance, which actually, as it happens, I think are both great skills for starting a business. But we were really lacking a kind of food science, food production knowledge. So as Brian mentioned, we got on the Foodworks program, which is an Enterprise Ireland run program. And part of that is working with Chagas, who do a lot of obviously food development and technology side of things. So naively, when we started, we thought that we would just make all this ice cream ourselves and we'd just have a little industrial kitchen that we'd be able to make everything and kind of grow it from there. I think that actually saved us in a way, because they really showed us what was necessary in terms of scaling a business to the size we wanted to get to and in line with our ambitions. And we realized quite quickly that that just wasn't going to make sense, just in terms of the costs for setting up a facility, the equipment we'd need, getting all that process in place. And then you start getting into, you know, HACCP plans and food safety, and that really wasn't our area at all. So it was actually really fortunate that we had that guidance, because I think we would have gone down a very different path and kind of quite quickly found out we'd made a mistake. So while we were making it in the first 2 years ourselves, and we were really hands-on, we made it for farmers markets. We just wanted to make sure we could get our recipe exactly right. And we used those farmers markets to test different flavors to get customer feedback. And we very quickly saw there was a demand, actually, which was really affirming. So we'd arrive at the market and there'd be a line forming already for people to buy the ice cream. We knew there was a demand, but we also were conscious we probably weren't the people to be actually making it day in, day out. So it took probably a year, 2 years to actually go from the stage of making it ourselves at home to actually finding someone, a manufacturing partner that was at the right size, that would make it exactly to our specification and to the quality we wanted, and also with consistency. So that was actually quite a challenging period, I think, at the start of the business.
And even on the retail side, as you suggested, we're coming at it very green from that perspective. So also on that Foodworks program, which was quite intensive, it was a 9-month intensive program. A lot of that was, it was nearly like a master's in launching your food product. And a lot of that was based around retailers and working with the multiples, stroke working with the independents, logistics. It was nearly like a college course. There were blocks in there that kind of filled a lot of gaps for us. While I know it wasn't practical experience, at least it gave us kind of an insight into that world. And as I suppose 8 years down the road, we've kind of been learning ever since, and still learning.
And take me back to the farmers markets and the first customers of the product. You had said, Rachel, your background was in advertising and marketing, and Brian, yours was in finance. And those are obviously very good skill sets for starting a business. How did, I suppose, the marketing background mix, you know, at the start, kind of before you had a product, when you sort of had an idea of a product, how did the first customers come on board, and what did that all look like?
Before we had anything, the first thing we actually had was our brand. Funny enough, like our logo and our name. And a key person in that equation was actually Brian's brother, John. He's now an architect, but he has been working with us since the beginning in terms of actually creating that visual identity. So we knew what Nobo was going to be about simplicity, about being dairy-free. That was back before we even had our ice cream. We all had this shared vision of what it was going to be, and then the challenges were how to get there and bring it to market. We were at that stage when we started the farmers market, making it at home. So Brian, you might tell the story of, I guess, even just the logistics of doing that was just so ridiculous when we look back, but it was one of those things you do when you're young. And I think, but anyway.
Yeah, it was kind of a mad period in our lives. In one sense, we were living in town and we were doing farmers markets we did Marley Park on a Saturday and Dunleary on a Sunday. We had this little ice cream machine that I think was 2 kilos that fit in it at a batch. And the batch might take an hour and a half to do. And I was working in, I got back from New York when Rachel was in the Foodworks program full time. I was working in a telecoms business and in finance there, kind of Monday to Friday. So Rachel would spend the week making ice cream in that little machine. And we had a freezer in the spare bedroom in the apartment. We had this freezer that would be filled by the end of the week, would be filled with ice cream. And then on a Saturday morning, we'd take all the ice cream out and put the freezer in the lift and go downstairs and bring we had a little small Golf, Volkswagen Golf, put the freezer into the boot of the Golf and then go up and get all the ice cream and fill the ice cream into the freezer that was in the boot and then bring that to the first market and then rinse and repeat and do it all again for Dunleary the next day. Inevitably, which again reaffirmed what we were doing, just when it started to get busy and Deliri on about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we'd sell out of ice cream. So pretty much without fail every weekend. So what it did for us, even from the first day at Morley Park, with our very bespoke setup with a table and a freezer, we had people stopping and buying our ice cream, which I know you'd want to expect as a business. But for us, we hadn't even gone that far. It was creating this product, this brand, and then suddenly everyone that was stopping was buying a tub. And what was amazing, they were not only doing that, but the week after the same faces would appear. So kind of for us, it was like, Jesus, this is actually not working, because there's a long way to go and there still is, but there is clearly a demand here for it. And then, as Rach said, that kind of went on the farmer's market side, that went from that to suddenly queues, lengthy queues around the park at Deliri on a Sunday. In terms of marketing back then, there weren't in many ways the tools in terms of, even back then, Instagram was probably just launched.
Yeah.
And Facebook was obviously there, but it was, the initial marketing was probably, because a lot of it was word of mouth, because the product was so unique, that we were getting people talking about it. And we had this kind of cohort of very loyal customers that once we did launch into stores were going to their local store to buy the product. So from the store manager's perspective, suddenly this new product that they reluctantly took in because they thought avocado and coconut milk ice cream was crazy, and we just were very nice to them and they did us a favor, suddenly that was actually going through the tills, and they were kind of like, and we got calls from managers laughing down the phone going, geez, it's actually gone, so can you come back in and give us more? And I think that was all actually driven by the farmers market customers and them actually being ready to buy the product once it went into store, as opposed to just landing in a store fresh.
Yeah, I think probably unknowingly that having that limited availability created a demand that then created a bit of excitement around the brand. And it was like, for us, it was a frustration because we would be like, oh, you'd see all these people turning them away disappointed on a sunny Sunday and knowing that we could have done double our sales. But I think what we didn't realize was that it actually drove a bit of excitement around the brand and actually created that limited edition feeling, or, you know, just a sense of people wanting it and arriving earlier, kind of following us in what we were doing. So, yeah, it's funny the way things go that we didn't see that at the time, but it's only in hindsight we can kind of see it now.
Were you under pressure in a way? I know you were running out of things when you were at the farmer's market, but when you started getting into retailers, was there a push then to kind of build up production? Or Rachel, were you still making the ice cream Monday to Friday and bringing the freezer down to the retailer? Or how did you transition the operations once you started getting a little bit bigger and a little bit more traction?
I think actually one of the things we were very conscious of was not launching into retail until we had our production ironed out. So in a way, that was one thing that caused the frustration because it took us longer. But we were really aware that we didn't want, say, there to be a change in quality or suddenly a change in ingredients when we started to scale up. So we actually held back on supplying any shops at all until we had got our production sorted. So that meant doing a number of trials at different facilities, adjusting the recipe. They would trial it on larger machines, which would inevitably have an impact on the texture. Like sometimes, because we were using, actually in the original recipe, we were using cashew nuts blended in to cashew milk. Then we were using avocado and coconut milk. And what kept happening, we'd go down and we'd do a trial. We'd be so excited. We'd have it booked in. You know, there'd be a cost involved as well. We'd buy in all the ingredients and we'd do the trial, and then it would come out and it would all kind of split, like separate, as if, you know, when you over whip cream. And it would just be so devastating. So we'd have to go back to the drawing board. And the answer we kept getting from any food scientists or any of the experts was, we'll just add the gums and stabilizers. That's why they're there. And we were like, well, that's one of our key points of difference. We don't want to add gums and stabilizers. We want to find a way to do it with as little ingredients as possible and to really just those to be real ingredients that everybody knows and recognizes. So it transpired after there was one time that we really thought like it's just not going to work, but it transpired that the answer was actually removing an ingredient, which I think is something we often think back on, like when we're confused over positioning or a product is actually the simpler the better. But it, by removing the cashew nut and just having the coconut and the avocado, it just worked. There was a process involved in that scaling, but we just did all that before we launched with shops and then made sure that we had a kind of a pipeline and we were able to supply. So it was actually quite a rapid growth then, in terms of launching into shops. And then we quite quickly after that got a nationwide listing with Super Value and then kind of into Tesco and so on.
And a lot of that, I suppose, a lot of thanks and a lot of nearly of that insight probably comes back to Foodworks, that program as well, with the guys from Board B and Tara, who's now CEO of Board B, being very laser focused on that we need to be able to scale once we go into retailers. If it was left to us, I'd say we would have been tempted to supply the odd tub to the local shop or two, which would have got us probably into that issue. But they were very strong on which obviously makes perfect sense. But I think when you're excited and keen to get more people eating your creation, it can be very tempting to launch maybe a bit early, but that was a really key learning we got from that program and from the guys in Board B. Yeah.
Well, certainly sticking to your guns on the ingredients part reminds me, I remember reading about Innocent Smoothies years ago, and one of their key things was that, you know, they didn't want any of the concentrates or any of the preservatives in it because they felt that they would be no different from anything else that was on the shelf if they had that. And again, thinking back to the almond milk, like any kind of almond milk or kind of nut milks that are on the shelves today, most of them have preservatives, some sort of chemical in them. And I suppose that's the reason why.
Yeah, it's definitely the easier route. But I think probably, again, I think our innocence or the fact that we actually didn't have experience in food maybe stood to us, because had we been confronted with all those barriers from the beginning and had a food science background, maybe we would have said it wasn't possible. But because we were coming at it from a different angle, we just couldn't understand why it wasn't possible and just felt like there was a way to do it if we stuck with it. And I think that actually did stand to us in the end.
In those early days, when you were trying to get the product ready and you were going to farmers markets before scaling up, was there an anxiety at all that this still might not be able to become a business and might not be able to support you guys? Because obviously you're a husband and wife team. So, you know, a lot was riding on this kind of working out for you.
Funnily, maybe it was naivety or just our excitement around the time, but I don't think it ever entered, certainly no. Both of our heads, that it wasn't actually going to work or turn into a business. And even now, there's no doubt that, well, and I presume we'll get onto that in terms of vision and where we're going. But even now, there's no doubt that we will push it on to get to hopefully where we're going to go. So I don't know. It certainly wasn't an arrogance back then at all. I think it was just this kind of fresh-faced excitement at our own business that we had created, and we saw people buying that. Genuinely, I don't think there was ever a word. There was challenges and dark days like any business, but I think we were always really confident that it would ultimately turn into a business that could sustain us and our family. Yeah.
And Brian, at what stage did you go full time? I know you said you were kind of working Monday to Friday in the early days. At what stage did you say I'm gonna go full time on the business now?
About 2 months before we launched into retail, I think.
Yeah.
So I was working in a company called Blueface. Alan Foy at that stage was the CEO who now is he's a very successful Irish businessman. Is now runs Venture Wave, which is a large new fund that is investing in kind of sustainable businesses, and he, I suppose, was influential in many ways in terms of he had an entrepreneurial background himself and a sensibility and really, even though I was working in finance there, was really pushing it and totally supportive and everything from that perspective. So I'd be keeping him updated, and at that stage, then I think at one stage I said, listen, I'm gonna go. And he said, here, listen, just do, why don't you do 2.5 days here at 2.5 days? Then at least you can kind of phase into it. So I did that, I think, for about 6 months and then went full time. So it was very early, actually. It was just as we entered retail, really. So, yeah.
And then once you entered retail, what were the key challenges then with anything, with kind of growing the business, once you had kind of reached that next point, what were the key challenges getting you to, I suppose, the next stage?
I suppose the business started to change then a little bit because, you know, it's funny when you start a business, you don't know upfront what are the skills you're going to need. And at different stages, it changes. So in the beginning, we were actually making the ice cream. We were, you know, it was very physical, hands-on. We were driving to the markets. We were doing all that. Then we kind of handed over the manufacturing. So then our roles changed. It became about sales, about marketing, finance, logistics, running the business. So, you know, meeting buyers, getting it in, which was something probably, if I'm being honest, it wasn't something we loved. I think our passion was more around creating products, about innovation and marketing and the brand and kind of bringing that to life. So suddenly our roles sort of changed a lot. And I think that was kind of, it took a little bit of adjustment and suddenly we were kind of running a food business, which was, it was a big change, but it was exciting as well. I think we, at around that time, which was probably another instrumental thing, we had submitted our ice cream for Great Taste Awards, their UK-based awards, and one of our flavours, our fresh lemon flavour, they're all blind tasted for these awards, and you can either win 1 star, 2 star, 3 stars, and then they also have a list of the top 50 food products, and that can be across any type of products, bacon, sausages, like anything. So our fresh lemon flavour won the top 50 foods across the UK and Ireland. And that was like actually a big piece of news and a big piece of PR. So on the back of that, we did a number of radio interviews and got a lot of press coverage. And we were able to get a listing with Supervalu through that, I think I'm right in saying. So that was a big milestone and a big shift in just in terms of awareness of the brand. And
I think those awards that they judge 10,000 different products each year. So to get into that top 50, as Ray said, kind of put us on the map of not just the consumers who are reading about it, but also the retailers. So we were getting a lot of requests for the product, which I suppose kickstarted the whole thing in many ways into retail.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. Can you give me an idea of the scale of the business now, what markets you're in? And, you know, from, I suppose, when you started at Farmers Markets, it was 9 years ago. What does the business look like today?
So we're still, in terms of our ambition versus where we are now, we'd still see ourselves as very, very, very small but ultimately growing. We're currently stocked in around about 500 stores around Ireland between our ice cream and chocolate. We export to the Middle East, and we also are available in Canada in about 120 stores with our chocolate over there, which is exciting and growing. And we're due to launch nationwide with the largest distributor in Canada in the coming months. And also due to launch into mainland Europe in the coming months also. So there's a lot going on. But as I said, in terms of our vision and ambition, I think we're only probably about 10% of the way there, maybe as a journey goes.
So you're 10% of the way there as such, but from getting from 0 to 10%, say, how much of that do you think was the product and the kind of initial idea and maybe the kind of creativity around that versus the execution and everything that's happened in between? What do you think is the balance has been?
Sometimes people underestimate the importance of brand. Like, I think you can actually have an amazing product that isn't, if it isn't packaged and positioned correctly, can get overlooked. I mean, like if we often take Oatly or something as an example, like that brand has been around for, I don't know, 20 years. I remember seeing it in health food shops 10, 15 years ago, and I wouldn't have even looked at it. It kind of had navy green packaging. And there was nothing wrong with the fundamentals of the product, and it was just sitting there, but it kind of a rebranding of it brought it to a completely different level, and a positioning of it as a kind of a barista milk, you know, really changed things for them. So I do think there are, I think it's kind of easy to focus on the product credentials, but I do think a lot of it comes down to branding and positioning. But at the same time, I think what makes people come back is actually the taste and the quality of ingredients. So even with our chocolate, the feedback we get is that people are surprised how good it tastes. And I think with treats, like things like ice cream and chocolate, which we make, it has to taste good. And there are a number of products on the market that, yes, they might be vegan, but then you look at the ingredients and the first ingredient is sugar. Or yes, they might be vegan, but they just taste awful. And, you know, they might be healthier, but it just doesn't deliver that sense of satisfaction. So it's probably been a combination of both. I think in the initial introduction to what we do, I think the branding, the design that John has done that looks kind of visually quite different, and our positioning really helps introduce people to it. But I think what drives the consistency and repeat purchases actually just around the quality of the product and ingredients. Well, hopefully anyway.
I know you said, you know, you're still on the journey, and you haven't even gotten to the halfway mark as far as you're concerned. But to date, has there been any points where you look back and say that was a tipping point in terms of, we knew at that stage, you know, you could both support yourselves or something like that? Were there any markings along the way that you felt this is now a real business and we can kind of get to the next stage from here?
From my side, I think it was that kind of surprise and devotion that our really early customers saw in the product at the farmers market. I think that really gave us a belief that, geez, we're actually onto something really interesting here, and there are people that do see the benefits of what we're doing in the same way that we do. One example I remember in Dunleary Farmers Market, we were setting up just at the start of the day, and a guy walked by, and not stereotyping, but looked like a college student. He had a backpack on, and he certainly didn't scream millionaire or anything like that. But he walked by and stopped and had a chat with us about what we were doing, and we talked for about 15 minutes about the product and how we made it and everything else. And he walked on, and about an hour later, he walked by again and asked for a tub. We gave him a tub, and he handed us a 50 euro note and walked on. And I chased him down. I was like, with the change? And he wouldn't take the change. He said, no, I think it's amazing what you're doing. I can see the passion. I want, that's actually, keep it. And literally wouldn't let us. And I know it's a simple story, but it really sticks with us until today. It's like,
yeah, and probably to bring it into the current stage, like we've recently gone through a massive change in the business, and that we've taken on investment in the last few months. We've always, as we touched on, had these ambition of where we wanted to go and this vision for the brand. And it's been a kind of nearly a point of frustration that we only have the two of us, and there's only so much we can do, and only so far we can kind of take it. So over the last few years, we've been looking at, you know, different options, but it's been really exciting because we found amazing partners. And I think it's just given us a huge confidence boost, and just that seeing that people are willing to back us and that really share our vision and have belief that we can get there. So I think it's just in the more recent times, that's actually been a huge change that's made a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. And I can get, it can be very internal, particularly even when we're husband and wife, that we have these grand visions and ideas about the business for two very experienced food investors to come in and really interrogate the business and come away thinking the exact same, that gives a huge sense of confidence.
Yeah. When did you decide to raise money for the business and that's what you needed to kind of to grow it?
I suppose it's something we've always thought about doing, and as from day one, we had very ambitious plans, so knew that it would take some resourcing to get there, but at the same time, we also wanted to go through our own process of taking the brand to a place that was exciting, and that was kind of towards our own vision, so it didn't get skewed early on in any way. So we had, I suppose, such a strength of vision from the start that we were happy to bring it a certain distance ourselves and further. But we've had, thankfully, a good bit of interest in the business from that side of things over the years. But again, as I said, kind of weren't ready or didn't feel the partner was right. But then I think, I suppose, as time went on and I suppose the realization comes of what is really required to get us to that stage or towards that stage, it's very clear that both financial resources, but also human resources are key to where we want to go. I think we've touched on our own skills being, I suppose, brand related and NPD related and innovation and again, that strength of vision, which I'd see as a skill. But in terms of what you mentioned earlier, in terms of product versus execution, on that execution side, commercially, we're acutely aware that that's a skill set that we need to bring in and that hasn't been there to date. And luckily, we have an amazing new head of commercial on board now, Onya Dowling, who is looking after that piece and we're excited to have her. And it kind of opens up a whole new world for us. So I suppose as we got closer to that in the last couple of years, we've kind of been more open to the idea, and our investors, our fund called Beavest, which is through Dave McKiernan, ex-Java Republic, and Hillard Lombard, who's ex-head of Value Foods. And we, I suppose, again, the nature of our business being husband and wife and being very precious about our brand in many ways, that's been a long process. And we certainly, I've actually known Dave for 5 years, who was keen to invest back then, and I've been staying in touch with him. But also even more recently, over the last 2 years, we've been talking to Hillard. And again, because of the nature of our business, we've been kind of very laser focused in terms of the values that we would look for from a potential partner. And I suppose it hasn't even been like a normal fundraising in many ways, in that even before the investment was done, we had sessions with Hillard on values and from both sides, and him making sure that we were aligned with himself also. But it's been a long process from that perspective. But as Rach touched on, we couldn't be happier with where we are. We both, in terms of a balance of obviously Dave started Java Republic. He has that experience of starting something from the ground up and being hugely successful at it. And then Hillard, from the corporate background, has had some of the biggest roles in Irish food and business. But also on Hillard's side, also has that, I think, sensibility around entrepreneurship and a really good sense of that and a shared vision for what we're trying to do. So it's really, really a match that we're delighted with, I think, from both sides. We have huge respect for what they've done and what's important for us. I think I'm right in saying they have a real sense for our vision and a respect for the brand that we've created, which is great.
How did you end up in the Middle East? What was it about that market that you decided to enter it?
I think I'm right in saying that was actually an opportunity that came to us. It was, again, through Board Bia. They had a cohort of buyers coming over from the Middle East that were looking for products that were in the kind of free from or plant-based space. And at that time, we were one of the few Irish businesses in that area. So it was actually one of the first export markets we launched into in the very early days of the business. And it was with our ice cream, which again brought its own challenges because you're looking at shipping a frozen product by boat actually to the Middle East, where you're looking at really hot temperatures. But it's actually been a really successful market for us. I think they value products that are maybe made overseas. There's a lot big expat community over there. We were able to go and do a kind of a visit after we launched there, which was really insightful actually to see the ice cream in the freezers and get a sense of the market over there. And it probably stands out as being quite different. They just don't have as developed a category in terms of alternative options. So back then it probably would have been Baskin Robbins and maybe Ben and Jerry's, and then we were the only kind of alternative ice cream. And there's quite a lot of people that would follow healthier diets, but also maybe dairy free and looking for something a bit different. So yeah, it's probably not one that we would have identified ourselves, but it was just kind of fortunate, yeah, in the opportunity.
And funnily enough, as an aside, that what we learned over there or just before we went is that Baskin Robbins have a huge presence there, and all that ice cream is actually made down in Cork in the same place where we did a trial when we first started out. So it's kind of an interesting learning.
So what are the ambitions for the business now? As you said earlier, you're at kind of 10% of where you think the business could go. What is the vision and what are the plans for the future?
A couple of different areas I think we're focusing on at the moment. As Brian touched on, we're excited to be working on a project that will launch the chocolate into mainland Europe. So that's going to be a kind of a big piece of work. But we just see there's a massive opportunity initially into Holland and then looking at kind of other areas. And as well as kind of working on that Canada piece. So, and then within the Irish market, we're looking at a couple of new products or chocolate ranges. So I think something that gets us really excited is new things. So we're always experimenting, and there's kind of a list of dream things that we've always wanted to bring to market. And now that we have the resources and the kind of backing, we're able to start to do that, which is really exciting. So kind of looking at a range of kind of nut butter and chocolate products and kind of some kind of a refresh of our frozen range, you know, adding some nice chunks and a few different things we're looking at. So there'll be kind of new products. And then another also very exciting project that we're working on is a kind of creating a home for Nobo. So it's something we're kind of close to finalizing at the moment, but it will see us kind of have a space that will be kind of a shop that will bring to life a lot of the creations that we've talked about over the years. And when I say over the years, I mean, like, I looked at a note, which I thought was just so ridiculous, of like the Nobo retail and all the different menu items from, I think it was 7 years ago, that was on my phone that I've, you know, been keeping along the years. So it's actually been a kind of thing that we've been incubating and thinking about for many, many years, and we've looked at doing, but we're actually finally close to kind of doing it now. So that's really exciting for us, because it'll bring a whole new side to the business. It'll also allow us to be more hands-on. We can kind of make chocolate there. We're going to be having a little kind of test kitchen space that we can do more innovation and product trials, and then also work from the area as well. So it's kind of a mixed use concept that is really exciting. So that'll kind of be hopefully this year as well.
Yeah, so I mean, ultimately, it is to be one of the leading health food stroke lifestyle brands in the world, as preposterous maybe as that sounds, versus where we currently are in terms of as an Irish brand, albeit doing some export, but that's always what we've strived to be, and where we can get to, where we think we can get to.
Thinking back over the time, you guys, and maybe it's because we're in an interview situation and everything else, but it strikes me that you've very much enjoyed the last 9 years, and you're kind of excited about what's to come. Has there been any moments where you felt that, maybe not that you would prefer to be doing something else, but has there been any particularly hard parts over the last 9 years?
Definitely. I think it would be so disingenuous to say there hasn't. Like, it's such a road of like stops and starts. And I think often you kind of see these businesses that launch and that are kind of these overnight successes, or go from farmers market to retail to export all within 3 years and have these insane turnovers. And it's just, I think we've had always a frustration in that we feel like it's taken us so long, and, you know, this kind of feeling of we should be doing more. And it's actually been a kind of a real challenge. And at the same time, like, we've had a family in between. So we've had three boys along the way, and it's just been the two of us. So I kind of, we have to remind ourselves that as well. But I do think it inevitably comes with a lot of challenges, and kind of you need a lot of, not even resilience, but just patience with the process. Because I do think it actually often takes brands a lot longer than we think to kind of get to a certain stage.
Yeah, I think that's that frustration and this feeling of why are we not here, or what are we doing wrong? Whereas if you really again interrogate those and I'm using overnight successes in inverted commas here, they're not. There's really, it's very rare to have an overnight success. And typically, if it is an overnight success, it might have started with 5 million euro in the bank account from day one type thing. So I think once we kind of try and remind ourselves that and as we grow and ultimately still travel towards where we're trying to get to, that has, but sometimes it's easy to say it, but it that has always been a source of frustration
Yeah, I think as well, like, as we touched on, the taking on investment has been a real milestone. So I think it's actually really reinvigorated us and kind of given us a new energy and excitement, because there's a certain point where there has been just the two of us, and you nearly need fresh energy and other people to kind of bounce ideas off and to kind of create that momentum that was there in the beginning. But you can kind of stagnate a little bit after a while where you're doing the same thing, and you can just feel like that frustration creeps in, and you reach a point where you realize you need something else to get to the next level. And it's a combination of financial input, but it's also people and support and kind of backup, and that I think we probably didn't realize how valuable that would be. And it's just been such a massive shift in just our working life, and having those people on board and that support and just a new energy, you know, that kind of really just drives you on, which has been really exciting.
Definitely. I mean, it's kind of, we're so close to it. It's sometimes you need someone to take a step back and kind of just, I suppose Hillard on this front has been key. We've talked to him a number of times during the week, every week, and he, with his background and his kind of understanding of our business, he's very clear about how to build those building blocks to get to, again, where we're trying to get to. So something like that has just been a huge sense of both relief and excitement, and gives great confidence in the journey.
What are you most excited about in the short term?
We always go back to, as Rach said, new things and new products and innovation and that retail space. So, which again is very exciting, because now that we know we have, I suppose, Anya, who's also going to be building a team as we grow in to kind of help drive that commercial side with the products, it also does free up the kind of space to allow us focus on those things. So I think it's always really those kind of, that area that does excite us.
Yeah.
And around all of that, just watching the brand grow and helping it grow.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure everyone listening will follow along with you, and we wish you the best of luck on that. Brian and Rachel Nolan, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks a million, Connor.
Thanks so much, Connor.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.